All right, Patrick O'Brien, Director of Flight Operations at Exec Air. Thanks for joining the show, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, awesome to be here. It's good to see you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, cool. Well, I wanted to reach out. I saw your post on LinkedIn about this integration that you guys have between Exec Air and MedAir. And so I wanted to ask you about it because it seems like a pretty massive feat. And you guys are using technology to solve some pretty big problems, it sounds like. So I wanted to understand a little bit about the integration, but first, if we can run through and cover, all right, what is Exec Air? What is MedAir? What do you guys do? I know from Exec Air, you guys have FBOs, sales, charter management, the whole deal, even maintenance operations as well. So yeah, if you can kick us off, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah. So I'll start with Exec Air. So, you know, we manage about 45 airplanes on the aircraft management side. We've got 120 pilots, worldwide operations, Africa, Asia, South America. We're flying around the world all the time, 24/7, 365. Like you say, we have a pretty big FBO network now that spans Canada, charter for sales operations as well. And of course, we have a heavy maintenance operation here in Montreal and in Toronto for Globals, Challengers, and other fleet types as well. And also too, here in Montreal, we paint aircraft. You know, we do all the sanding and the prepping and the painting. So it's a pretty cool operation. Actually, it's kind of cool to watch the planes get sanded and painted. But yeah, so it's fairly large company. And then, you know, MedAir, we've had a long partnership, long relationship with MedAir. MedAir has been here, in Exec Air as a partner since before I even joined Exec Air. So that was, you know, at least 12 years ago. So the relationship's even longer than that. You know, MedAir, what people know it for mostly in the business aviation community is MedLink. So basically it's MedLink and also the first aid kits within the aircraft. So, you know, they have really cool first aid kits that have, you know, like this is what they're mainly known for. And then also on the MedLink side, that's something that I've actually used personally a couple times where you're on the road or you're in the air and a medical emergency happens, whatever that may be. You pick up the phone and immediately you get connected with a physician and a nurse practitioner, and they can guide you and help you with the situation you're going through. They can guide you to the local approved healthcare providers that they've vetted. They also pay for the services, so it's very seamless for you. We've had situations where we've had aircraft in the air that have had in-flight medical emergencies. They pick up the phone, they call MedAir, and MedAir takes care of them. The plane lands, ambulance is already there standing by. The hospital's already been briefed about the patient and their condition. So it's actually a fantastic service, and we're very happy to be partnered with them. One of the things that's kind of new though to MedAir is this whole security assessment thing. This kind of okay. came after the medical component, and this is more like, okay, so if we're going to Kinshasa, DRC, for example, what's the security situation at the airport? You know, what's the security situation in the city? Are there places in the city we have to avoid? You know, they also have airspace avoidance and risk mitigation technology, so we can look at different airspaces. So, for example, Sudan, what's the situation in the Sudanese airspace? Is the FIR closed? What, you know, is there anti-aviation weaponry? You know, they do these kind of security analyses on airspace as well. And that's something that we keyed into for this integration.
Okay. All right. So that's a good explanation. And so let's dive into some of these key areas on there. So I know that one of the pieces, so I'm just actually going to read your words exactly, but the first key challenge was provide flight crews and operational staff with accurate, reliable, and accessible information to assess location and airspace risks for planned missions. So that's pretty much what you just covered, was being able to get that info to you guys. I know that was done via an API. So if we can kind of dive into that, what does that look like? What's the real challenge that's solving in these cases? How was it done before? You know, like how has this changed the dynamic of that situation?
Yeah. Well, you know, business aviation has always been, If you look at the commercial airlines, right, their analysis, the way they go about doing business is different because they have very set routes, very set destinations. When they set up a route, they do all of this analysis, right? And of course, the major international airlines, they all go to airports that have extremely high levels of security. Amsterdam, London, Heathrow, these places, they all have international levels of security in terms of the standard. So for them, it's quite easy managing these situations because they know what their trips are, they know where they're going, they've always been there, they go there the same time every day. And so it's kind of done. This security assessment concept is kind of done at the outset when the route is set up. But for business aviation, it's not possible because we go to hundreds of destinations a year. And these destinations, we're not going at the same time, we're not going to the same time of year. We're maybe even within a particular location, we may be going to a different airport, not the main airport that we usually go to, depending on where the client wants to go and what their meetings are and so on and so forth. So this created a pretty interesting, not risk, I would say, but situation that we have to address. So and a lot of business aviation operators, what they do is they give that as a responsibility of the pilot in command. And Exequair does the same. But as the operations manager, ultimately I'm responsible to, vis-a-vis our regulator, Transport Canada. I'm responsible vis-a-vis our clients as well to make sure that their assets are protected. And so what we try to accomplish is say, okay, well, we need to give the pilot in command tools of accurate, non-biased data by which they can review a location's particular security story and determine if they need to mitigate those issues in some way. So, as an example, I was assigned a crew member to fly into Zacatecas in the center of Mexico. And Zacatecas is basically the center point for a lot of drug war stuff, and it's kind of the headquarters of the Sinaloa cartel, and so on and so forth. So
So
we
minimal
look,
danger, really,
yeah, not too bad, but that's where the client's business was, right? That's so as a business aviation operator, our responsibility is not to say no necessarily to our clients. It's to make the mission possible. But how do you make the mission possible? Well, you have to do a proper analysis. You have to have factual data, and then you have to develop mitigation strategies, to mitigate those risks, right? So we looked at Zacatecas. We looked at MEDAIR provides what they call ATSBs, which are airport travel security briefings, and these things go into, detail about the airport and is it fenced? Is there CCTV? Is it co-located with military installations? They go into significant detail in terms of what's going on at the airport, but then they also go into a lot of detail on location specific, like in the city center, are there places in the city to avoid? What about cars for hire? What kind of ground transportation should you be looking for? And then also at location, what kind of hospitals are reasonable international standard hospitals. So we looked at it, and the outcome of the conversation with the client was, well, we're not comfortable leaving the airplane at that location overnight. So what we considered was, we'll fly the airplane in, we'll drop the passengers off. The passengers, obviously, because it's their business, they have full secure transportation and they've done this before and so on and so forth. And then we'll take the plane, we'll reposition it somewhere else overnight. And then when you're ready, we'll come back and pick you up. So that's a very so for people who don't have access to that technology, doing that analysis requires them to consult various different sources. It could be the news, it could be the US State Department website, it could be the Canadian Foreign Affairs website. And what we found is that those are good sources, but they're not aviation specific sources. So the data you were getting is basically as if you were getting off an airplane commercially and going, hiking, but that's not what we were doing. We're doing an aviation specific mission, so we should have aviation specific risk data. And then also one of the things that's good about MEDAIR is that they also provide their assessment because, I'm a pilot. At the end of the day, I don't really know geopolitical security and stuff like that. That's not what I've been trained to do. But that's what Medair is. I mean, their team there are all guys that have either worked in the U.S. military and the CIA and these various large governmental organizations that specialize in risk identification and providing assessments. So that's also been very valuable for us. So that was a that's a you know that's a key example of giving the pilots the access to that tool so that they can do their job that they can do their job more efficiently and ultimately to a better standard in some cases. And then one of the other things that I would say as well is the key for ExecAir has always been like if you're a pilot coming in, and I'm sure that you've probably experienced this in other facets of the companies that you work for, is that sometimes it becomes very challenging to navigate all the different digital tools that are available to someone, right? So I have this tool and it's highly specialized and I do this and this tool. And then I got this tool and that tool and this tool and that tool. And then the less you use the tool, so let's say there's a particular tool that you only use once a year. Well, to refresh yourself, get your password. Oh, I forgot my password. 2FA, this, all this kind of stuff. What ends up happening is it's a roadblock to usage. And a lot of times when there's roadblocks to usage, people just don't do it. And that in itself is a risk that has to be mitigated. So we've been working with Medair over the last couple of years on this project. And now the pilots, like ExecAir has our own app. It's called the Fly ExecAir app. It's where all of the pilots do all their job there. Training, checking, maintenance, serviceability checks, everything is done there. So basically what we said is, look, we don't want you necessarily to go into Medair unless you really, really need to dig to a level of detail that the app cannot provide you. But in the Fly ExecAir app, we've given them all of the local security risks in a digital format. They're able to download now the airport travel security briefings directly from the Fly ExecAir app. They don't have to leave the app. So we've basically taken all of that curated and actionable content from the Medair platform, imported it into our app so that the consumption of the data is very easy for the flight crews, which then make them actually interested in looking at it, and we remove barriers from them looking at it. And what we found is that has, our participation in that kind of concept of, location security assessment has grown because we've removed the roadblocks. So yeah.
So it's a let me make sure I'm following this whole thread. So this you've got Medair, so they're putting together these briefings, and you're getting everything from the airport location itself and kind of the security components that go along with it presented to you in a way that is very business general aviation specific. It's not going to be so much like if I'm a regular passenger going, it's more so that way as a pilot, as a crew member, I'm here with this multi-million, multi-$10 million asset. I'm generally flying high net worth individuals. So take your example in the center of Mexico. I'm going to land here. And then what happens? If I'm a crew member and I leave it here, what are the security options that I have for the aircraft itself? Do I feel like I could get back to the aircraft pretty successfully? If I take transport, what are the kind of ways that it works around? What are the risks with that? Is this even a feasible place for us to stay overnight and then be able to kind of give all that information to the pilot in a way that they can make that assessment and then go, in that case, actually, we don't think this is safe. It's actually a better idea for us to literally fly out, go somewhere else, and then come back and land and pick them up for security reasons. So that's the one aspect of the pieces of data getting delivered to you. And then what you guys have done is remove the technology barrier from that by actually, okay, pilots are in this single app, whatever else they might be doing flight planning, doing, updating times, checking maintenance stuff, but it's being able to feed that in here. So now it's one less password, one less system, one less set of navigation that I have to go learn. I can take this data, come in here, and maybe they would do it before every once in a while, or hey, I've been here before, it seemed pretty safe. I'm confident to just fly there. But even so, it's just making that stuff more accessible. So the adoption of it has increased because now there's not that barrier. Am I following that?
That's 100% correct. Yeah. 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 And one of the other things too is that the app allows the user to basically move into midair. So,
okay,
you know, the FlyExecure app is never going to be the midair app. Why? Because why would we do that? You know, midair spends, you know, if not millions of dollars to develop this digital infrastructure. I'm not here to recreate that. It doesn't make any sense. But I'm here to pull out data that I need. And then if the pilot, for example, says, you know what, I want to do a more deep dive on this location. Okay. Well, in the FlyExecure app, click the button to access midair, bang, single sign on right into the midair application. You know, all trying to reduce those barriers of the adoption of the technology. And by doing so, we increase the participation in the procedure, in the process.
Nice. And I mean, I don't know if you're comfortable sharing, but like what is that kind of percentage increase or just like general increase? Like, what did you notice?
Well, you know, it's kind of, I couldn't quantify it in a percentage.
Sure.
But it's one of these things is that when people are by nature curious, right? So if you provide them access and they see it, they're going to be curious. They're going to look at the data, right? So, and our pilots, the way that we've integrated this into our FlyExecure app is that our pilots on a per leg basis, they have pre-flight checks to do in the app. So they have to check, for example, the fatigue level of the trip, their training status, whether the airplane is maintenance serviceable or not, and so on and so forth. And one of those checks now is the midair data. So the pilots have to, when they do their pre-flight check, go in, review the midair risks, and then say, oh, okay, I've reviewed them, basically. So we've made it a mandatory step in their pre-flight review.
Got it. Okay. So that makes sense. And I'm curious if you noticed that this particular implementation of software or this part of the process was actually easier this time around since they're already in the app versus when you first launched this app and getting people use it. Did you notice that it was harder up front, but now that they're in it and it's part of the workflow, that adding something to that was less of a hurdle? Or what did you notice?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. But I mean, for me, it was, we always had to just keep our core concept, I guess, how would you say that? We always strive to deliver the same core concept, which is provide the pilots with concise, curated, and actionable data. So if we continuously do that, that's easy. So the adoption is easy. Now, when we first came out with the FlyExecure app, it was difficult because, you know, we didn't even have an app before. This whole concept of like itemized pre-flight checks was not there. Like the procedure was there, but people would do them in different applications and they'd go. But now it's all centralized, it's robust, it's in a singular platform. But when we did the design, we had to make sure is that, okay, we have a lot of administrative things that we need pilots to do. But the way to ensure that those administrative things get done is to make them the least burdensome on the pilot as possible.
Yep.
So I guess to answer your question, this is kind of a roundabout way to answer your question in a way, but if we were to add the functionality in a way that is not aligned with that core strategy, then that would be difficult.
Yep.
But because of the way that we designed it in terms of the implementation, it's easy because we built it in line with that core strategy of easy to use tech.
Got it. Yeah, no, it makes sense. And plus, when you first put out a first version of any app or whatever, you're making a ton of assumptions. They're educated guesses, but then when it hits reality, and then you realize, okay, we put all these barriers in front of somebody, but actually they needed to do step 10. That needs to be actually step 3. And this, now everybody's flipping out. All right, let's put step 10 as step 3. All right, yeah. 70% of people can use this now, and we avoided this. So it's like, you know, and then you learn from that when you roll out something new like this, like, all right, we already, mistakes of the past, we don't need to do these 15 things. Let's skip this stuff and get right to the meat of this.
Sure. No, 100%. And, you know, from a user adoption standpoint, like if we, how do I say this? I gotta think of the way that I'm going to that I'm going to say this. Well, let's move on. Let me come back to that. Let me think about the way that I'm going to answer that question. But let's move on.
Sure. Well, I guess just to your point on this with the like the specific information and having it tailored, that does really tie into that second point that you mentioned about the integration of how as things change, it's delivering updated but curated information. So what does that look like?
Yeah, so that's actually the biggest functionality gain that the integration has provided. So actually, that's what I was going to come back to. So thank you for jogging cool. my memory. You know, we live in a world that's becoming more and more digitized, in that data is moving a lot more freely between groups, right? Mm-hmm. And that's also one of the core strategies that we've tried to develop with this FlyExec Air app is, you know, if maintenance has data, and that data is important, that data should be easily shareable between platforms. Yep. So that the people that need the data don't have to go pull it, and the people that have the data don't have to push it. Because anybody who's worked in this business long enough knows that if you have to push or pull data, a lot of times it doesn't happen, or it's late, or whatever. So the FlyExec Air app has really tried to bridge that gap. So if there's departments that have data that the pilots need, we've made that, we've tried to seamlessly integrate those things together. So in that same concept is that with Medair, what we've done is we've said, okay, the pilot in command may get assigned to a flight 3-4 weeks in advance of the actual flight happening, right? It could be even longer than that. It depends. Sure. But generally speaking, pilots are maybe assigned to trips 2 to 3 weeks in advance. So when the pilot gets assigned to the trip, they have the Medair briefings, it's all great. They do their analysis and they come up with a plan if they need to come up with a plan. Now, 98% of the time, based on the destinations we're going, it's not necessarily, there is no major mitigation plan because we're going to Florida. You know, there's no major risk component there. Sure. I mean, the biggest risk is TFRs associated with the president and so on and so forth, but that's not really a risk. That's more of an operational issue. However, Medair does raise those issues as well to us, which is also a very added benefit. It's not just risk. It's risk in the broad sense of the word. What can cause a delay in my operation or a disturbance in my operation? So for example, if the French air traffic controllers go on strike like they do every summer, then that's a risk in a way, right? So what is the mitigation? We would have a mitigation associated with that. So that's one component. But so all that to say is that the pilots would go into the FlyExec Air app. They'd say, okay, I've done my analysis. Nothing. I don't have any overriding security concerns. So I don't really have to come up with a mitigation strategy. Perfect. Okay. Well, now what happens if all of a sudden it's hurricane season and there's a hurricane that's forecasted for, you know, Fort Lauderdale, for example, and we're in Opa-locka?
Yep.
Okay. Well, now that's a problem because the pilots assigned to the flight 3 weeks in advance, they've done their analysis. Everything looks good. But between the 3-week period that they got assigned and the actual trip happening, a lot can change in that period of time.
Yeah, especially on that front. That's a great example. That could change literally every hour or every few hours.
Correct. Now, you know, and that's one of the things that people don't really realize is that, Hurricanes are, especially the ones that are coming towards the United States, are very highly mediatized. There's a lot of attention. Pilots will get that information through the traditional channels of information, like the news or X or whatever pilots kind of use as news tools. They'll
Sure,
get
but
that.
even that though, I mean, you could get pretty desensitized to that because there's, how many are coming through and how many are really going to impact me or this particular mission, or they said it was going to go to the West Coast, so maybe I won't really worry about that,
100%. Yeah, 100%. So for us, it was like, well, how do we make sure that during that 3 week period, if anything changes from the initial analysis, we need to know about it. But the only way to know about it is for MEDAIR to know that the plane is going to be there at that time. Right?
Okay. Yep.
So because MEDAIR basically has this worldwide network like MEDAIR is part of International SOS, right? So one of the world's largest security and medical companies in the world, right, is International SOS. So their network is extremely broad and worldwide. So they're able to quickly ascertain these issues, and then they funnel them into their system. So what we ended up doing is said, okay, well, look, what we want you to do, and let me kind of take one more step back. I'm part of the MEDAIR advisory board, and one of the things that came up frequently is that people get desensitized to these alerts, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm part of I'm on a distribution list for Ops Group, which is a very cool platform. So I'll get notices every day. I get the operational daily brief of worldwide events. And I'll get stuff like, well, there's problems in the Middle East again, or there's issues in Africa, or this and that. And I'm like, well, that's interesting for me as the operations manager. But for the pilots that are only flying domestically North America, just them receiving that alert desensitizes them to the fact that if they actually do get an alert that's North America focused, they may not see it, or they may
Yeah.
disregard it. Right. So there is a real component of notification fatigue that kind of creeps into these things. So that's why I come back to the word curated. That's why curated was such an important piece for us, because we wanted the pilots to know, okay, this information is very specific to what you are going to be doing. So if you're
Yeah.
getting this notification, it's because you need to like look at it. It may be nothing, but at least it's relevant to your mission. So that's what we ended up doing, is we said, okay, MEDAIR, we're going to send you our entire future schedule, and we're going to do that every 10 minutes through API, right? So every time a flight changes, we'll send you the change. And then their system takes all of our flights, and they monitor the flights for any type of risk. And if there's a risk that pops up, it immediately sends a push notification through a webhook back to Exacare. We consume that webhook, which then triggers a push notification to the assigned crew through the Fly Exacare app. I also get it as the operations manager, and our dispatch team also gets that alert as well. So the information is, I don't have to now go pull information. It's just, if there's going to be a problem, I'm going to know about it. And I feel confident that I'm going to know about it. And this is hypercritical, because we sometimes we take things excuse my I'm
For
I'm
granted.
for granted. I'm from Montreal, so sometimes I had a French sentence there creeping into my brain. I'm like, no, I'm not going to say that. So thank you. But we frequently during the winter time, we'll have aircraft that will go down to the Caribbean, and the client will go on their boat, and they'll do their thing, and the plane may sit in the Caribbean for 3 weeks. And in that time, a lot of our flight crews come home, because we all it doesn't make a lot of sense necessarily to leave them with the airplane unless the client really specifically requests that. But a lot of our crew come home, because that allows us to balance their work life balance, to make sure that they're not away from the home too much. But that created another example of where this technology is hypercritical, because if you're on location, right? You're going to kind of have a peripheral understanding of what's going
Yeah.
on in that location. But if the plane is being dropped off in St. Kitts, for example, and you fly back to Toronto or Montreal or New York, the chances that you're going to, through your traditional news network or your traditional channels of consuming world events, that you'll learn or hear that there's a tropical storm off the coast of wherever and it's going to hit St. Kitts, the chances of you actually getting that information are extremely low.
Yeah.
Right? So that's why this technology is super crucial, because at the end of the day, if we're leaving an airplane in St. Kitts, I'm not going to rely on the handler or the local agent to be my asset monitoring person. That's not
Because
what they're, yeah.
there's no real skin in the game there. Like there's not an ownership there.
No. And then, again, like if you're in Europe, the handler maybe they'll, because of their procedures and the experience they have and everything, they'll be on it and they will reach out to us proactively with airport related issues. But if I have an airplane parked perhaps in the DRC, for example, is the handler going to operate in the same fashion as the handler in Munich? Maybe, but maybe not. So I can't rely on the handlers, being my eyes and ears on location. It's just not a reasonable expectation. And if the crew are not there and they don't have access to this type of technology, how are they monitoring the situation on site to make sure that, oh, if there's some type of risk, I need to be able to get back to the airplane? And likewise, if, for example, they were assigned to the flight 3 weeks prior to the ETD, they a week before, all of a sudden, there's a hurricane forming or something, they may now decide, well, I was supposed to come home, but now I'm going to stay because I want to be close to the airplane if things go sideways, right? And if you even push that concept further, is that it has helped us in the past brief our client. And we've said, okay, hey, I know that you guys have a trip to St. Kitts, but our systems, our risk assessment systems are saying that there's local weather patterns there that could turn into a tropical storm and this and that and all this. Us being partners with our client and giving them that information, they also benefit from that, because maybe that will change their travel plans, or maybe they'll decide to defer or go later, or it could help them make those type of decisions.
Yeah. Well, and then that makes it where you're trying to deliver a certain level of service or a certain level of experience, and being able to be proactive and share that with the customers up front. It definitely adds to that experience, but it also can avoid, at least in some cases, like taking away from those experiences. Like if you're gonna go, I mean, you spend a bunch of money to fly down somewhere in the Caribbean, and go on a yacht or whatever that may be, whether you own that yacht or if you're chartering the yachts. I mean, it's crazy. It's like a couple $100,000 for a week for some of these things. It's nuts. So to be able to go to somebody and be like, "Hey, I know you really wanted to do that for a whole week. Just a heads up, it might actually be 4 days. Here's what we're seeing. We'll be on standby for you guys if it seems to be going that way." And you can kind of change, like, you can try to kind of change the entire trajectory of somebody's trip experience, but based on real data. And it's like, it's actually informative.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
And hyper precise.
Yeah.
So yeah, and that's really, I keep coming back to that, and I don't want to overstate it, but it needs to be stated, is that the reality of notification fatigue when you're running a worldwide operation that could go anywhere at any time is real. It's a real thing.
Yeah, I mean
So
it's just information constantly hitting you, and it's great to have information, but at a certain point when you spend equally as much time sifting through them as you do like receiving them and actually doing your job, it's pretty tough. Like I get notifications all the time, and I'm not operating any equipment like flying a plane or flying passengers or things like that. And it's just, it really is nonstop. So it's interesting that you kind of leaned in on that piece to make this, you know, actually valuable. Because you could do all this stuff and get all this data to everybody, but at a certain point, if you overwhelm them, you almost undermine all that effort pretty much.
100%. And I'll give you an example, a real world example. So I was assigned to a trip. We were flying one of our Challengers down to Canwan in the basically it's south of St. Vincent in St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Very small island, but really nice. And just to the north of that island is St. Vincent's. And on St. Vincent's, there's actually an active volcano, basically.
Okay.
And it's generally speaking dormant. But in that particular circumstance, we got an alert from MedAir saying, hey, by the way, this volcano is now showing signs of activating itself. You know, or I don't know what the official geological term, right? But, you know, it's in the process of becoming active, right? So we looked at that and we said, oh, okay, well, I was the captain on the flight. So I went and I said, okay, well, we have to talk to the client. And we talked to the client and the client said, oh, well, you know, we'd like to go anyways. But what it did do is that if, you know, Canwan is kind of just south of the island and we were coming from the north. So obviously to get to the island, we have to fly over the other island. So we obviously decided not to do that if the volcano is active, flying at low levels over top of it. So that was one of the mitigations. And then the secondary mitigation is that we were planning on not staying because the plane was supposed to be there, I think, for 12 or 13 days. So we were planning not to stay there because the costs of hotels were prohibitive, of course. So we looked at airline and home. But when that information came up and we had the discussion with the client, we decided that the crew was to remain with the airplane. You know, so again, I kind of think back to that and I'm like, what happens if I didn't get that MedAir alert? And would I have known? Would my decision have been different? Would I have, you know, and the reality of the matter too is that, you know, when we show up at these locations and we're going home, we're trying to get home as fast as possible, right? Sure. We're not going to sit there and take in the news of St. Vincent and the Grenadines and talk to the locals. And like, we're not going to do that. We're going to try and get on the airline as soon as possible. So would I have been somehow made aware of that information? I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah.
You know, I really don't know. So, but you know, and then this is kind of where these accident models kind of come in where it's like, okay, well, you know, it's the Swiss cheese model of accidents, right? So, if I didn't know and I decided to go home and then all of a sudden it just so happened that statistically the volcano erupted at that time. And now we're in a situation where I can't get back to the island to get the plane out because there's a volcano that's erupting. So the airline travel will be likely affected significantly. So I won't be able to get back to the airplane. The airplane could be damaged from ash or soot or things that are falling on it. And not to mention, we can't serve our client, you know, so, you know, all those things had to align in the sense that I would have not known, and it had to have coincided with the volcano actually having an eruption, and that eruption, you know, the wind being in a certain direction so that the eruption affected the airplane that was about 100 miles to the south of it. So all these things had to align. But the problem is that the consequences of that alignment would be significant.
Yeah.
Right. Could be very significant. So, you know, it's one of these things when you do risk analysis or risk mitigation, you always have a model, right? It's severity, right, as the x-axis, and frequency as the y-axis. So if you have an event that is extremely rare, but the consequences are extremely dire, then it remains to be something that has to be critically mitigated because the consequences are so severe. You know, so if you go ahead. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Keep going. That makes sense.
Yeah. So like we are doing these analyses all the time. Like we had an airplane that was in India actually when the Israelis started attacking Iran. And like, I don't know what your geographic knowledge is, but in that area, getting back from India to North America, there are not a lot of options, right? To the north is Russia, and then directly to the west is Iran and Iraq and Syria, and then to the south is Africa with Sudan, and those airspaces are very restrictive. So there's only really one way to get out of the Middle East, or at least of India, without going the other way. But this airplane couldn't go the other way. It had to go back west. It couldn't go east. It didn't have the range to go east. So we had to fly the
Okay.
plane out. So we're like, okay, well, where are we going to go? Well, we have to go through Egypt. Okay, well, everybody's going to go through Egypt. And the reality is that Yemen was firing missiles up the coast through the Red Sea up into Israel. So it was a high stakes type of situation where we had to determine, okay, how are we going to plan this? But that's where Midair came in. Number one, it advised us. And then it also gave us some assessments of the situation, likelihood of attack, and they did an assessment, and then we came up with a mitigation. And so it's a very important tool for us. There's no question
Yeah.
about
Did you guys ended up going through Egypt?
We did, yeah, we did, but we did the airplane. We planned it so that it would fly as high as possible. So I think it was up at
Okay.
43,000 feet. We
Good
had
call.
very, yeah, we flew it. We made sure it flew on very specific airways that were known to be safe and secure. We tried to play. We made sure it was far enough south of Israel that there's no any there were no issues. So we basically cut right across Saudi Arabia into Egypt and then north, instead of coming closer to Israel. So,
Okay.
but again, this is one of these situations which is highly mediatized, right? The Israeli-Iran conflict is obviously very in the media, right? No one's going to miss that something like that is going on. So I wasn't necessarily too concerned of the Midair integration helping us with that particularly. It does, of course, but it's not, excuse me, where the integration is very beneficial are these kind of smaller scale issues that
Yeah, you wouldn't
are.
think to look for a volcano. Like, that just doesn't, that wouldn't cross really somebody's mind to let me go double check on a normally dormant volcano. Like, I mean, you're like, you really, you're really going for a Pilot of the Year award, I think, if you're, but it's like, how long can you really sustain that level of like looking into everything too?
Yeah.
You kind of need
Well,
a whole network, a whole infrastructure to do that.
for sure. And I would say, one of the other advantages of this as well is that if there's anything about business aviation that we could all agree on, is that it changes every minute, right? So a client may give me a flight from Montreal to New York in 3 weeks from now. And by the time we actually leave, it's Montreal to San Francisco, then down to Florida, then back to New York, then back to San Francisco, back to Montreal, right? Like it just changes. And that's business aviation, and it's great. And that's why I love it. That's why I'm in the industry, because I love challenge. I love change. But now the question is, how do you manage that change, right?
Yeah.
So as you say, if the pilot has the opportunity, the time to sit down and do the analysis, but what now happens if that analysis can't be done because the pilot is, it's a last minute change. Okay, instead of going here, we're going to go here, right? Does he have the time to complete the analysis to be able to mitigate it effectively? And that is also an interesting component where this integration helps us, because the integration, because it's done through our scheduling system and it's updated every 10 minutes, ultimately, quite frankly, Medair probably knows about the trip change in advance of the actual pilots knowing, right? Because
Yeah,
it's
because I
just
mean, if it's
so.
calling every 10 minutes, it's a great way to just ping that network, get that information back. So by the time, yeah, they might get a Midair alert before they even get a scheduling change alert.
Exactly. Yeah,
That's
exactly.
cool.
Yeah, so it's really a cool tool. Yeah, very cool tool.
Well, I know you've got a hard out in 10 minutes, so I don't want to take up that whole time. So before we wrap, is there anything else that you want to touch on?
No, I mean, I think, you know, thinking back to that point where I was trying to think of the way to say, back in earlier in the podcast, I kind of got stumped on something that I wanted to figure out what the best way to say that was. But, you know, I know Greg and I had exchanged some LinkedIn talk a couple weeks ago in, you know, rehashing the importance of digitization and integration of data. For ExecCare as an operator, we don't do business with vendors that do not provide integration opportunities because it's not reasonable in the market today for these tools to not have that capacity to integrate. And the thing about business aviation is, again, every business aviation operator may do business differently. And that could be in response to their local requirements, their regulatory environment, the mission profile that they run, the types of airplanes that they run. Everything can be different. So where we've kind of spent a lot of effort is saying, okay, well, we know that our business may be different from another operator. So, you know, when we do business with flight scheduling systems, we don't expect the flight scheduling system to meet our business requirements 100% because it's not really possible. Like ExecCare, for example, we run AMOs and FBOs and charter sales and management and all sorts of things. So our business model may be different than a US Part 135 operator that just flies Citation 10s, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So, but by having the capacity to build these integrations, and then now with ExecCare's Fly ExecCare app, our proprietary iOS app, we can take the data from the specialized tools that we don't want to recreate. I don't want to recreate a flight scheduling system, too expensive to do the basics. I don't want to recreate Medair. I don't want to recreate Airink Direct. I don't want to recreate FlightBridge. I don't want to recreate any of these tools because why would I? But what I insist on is that I can take the data that I want out of these systems to build the front-end interface that my employees use and that my users use so that it's taking the best of all the systems, but in a way that's very easy for them to digest and consume. So super critical, and the Medair integration is just another step towards that delivering on that model.
Yeah, well said, man. And just like with the, you know, being in this space for a while before, and now with this company that I'm at now, we see some of these pieces where it's so many disconnected systems, and the amount of issues that it causes that people don't really realize that it's causing, it's pretty astounding. Once you see, you kind of get the before and the after, like even like a financial piece, like we got this integration from our system to QuickBooks. And it's something that you would go like, all right, you know, people could say whatever, you know, it's whatever, it's just pushing data. But then you ask some of the people and it's like, well, that was like a person's full-time job, where we had a full-time employee that was doing that part-time. We don't need to have that anymore. Or yeah, this took me a full day. It took two people a full day every month to do that. It's like, all right, you know, these are not low paid people. These are not like unskilled, you know, this is not like it costs us $30. It's like, you know, something like that could cost you thousands of dollars a week, a month, you know, and at your scale, probably a day. So it's just, it's really interesting to see the downstream impact of some of this stuff.
Yeah. And you know, I'll close on saying two things. You are 100% correct. Is that you've said it very well, is that the people that are actually acting as these data integrators, right? If I could take that person and I can say, listen, like, this is not value added work for me, for you to take data from here and there. The data, the value add for me is if I can do all of that and then you just monitor what's going on. And when something goes wrong, you step in and you use your experience, your knowledge to address the exception, right?
Yep.
So that's very well said. And then because some people find that technology consumes jobs. It's not necessarily the case. It's that technology allows people that were doing tasks that were not value added to now concentrate on value added tasks. It's a different way of looking at things. And then the last thing, you said you talked about the QuickBooks integration. Aviation is inherently risky. It's a risky business that what we do. It's inherent to our operation. That's why we have SMS programs. That's why we have all these tools. So the, from an, if you're an accounting firm, right, and you're looking at this and you say, oh, we need data integrations, all you're really going to gain there is some form of efficiency or cost savings, right? But as an aviation operator, I could be gaining, I could be avoiding an accident. I could be protecting, avoiding incidents, right? So it's even more critical in businesses that are risky inherently to have these data integrations, because that seamless movement of information actually prevents, can prevent actually significant incidents or accidents.
Well said. I know you got to run. So, where can people find you?
Oh, anywhere on LinkedIn, on Exacure's Instagram these days at least. By email, patrick.o'brien@exacure.com. But LinkedIn is definitely preferred. And super great being with you, Chris. I really appreciate you having me on and talking through this. It's something we're really, really excited about. And I appreciate you taking the time. And next time I'm in Florida, I'll stop by.
Awesome. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Cheers. Bye-bye.